For April the 3rd, 2015, we talk about Bloodborne, Google Maps Pac-Man, and we ask you where you stand on collector's editions. Welcome to the 99th level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Mysmith.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We are back this week. Thank you, Jala, for joining us here on the 99th episode of our show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So last week I was away for a Bloodborne binge, and I successfully completed the game, which is good, by keeping myself to 8 hours a day. So I didn't repeat last year's mistake of losing my fucking mind. Although I did only leave the house twice.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. And that is one of those things that you don't realize until you step outside to go to work. You think, huh, oh, this could get real bad if I stop thinking about it. So yeah.
So was this enough for, like, crazy Bloodborne dreams?
No. So the 8 hours a day, I think is sane and reasonable. Like, in reality, that's more than I work, in a day, you know, with, you know, lunch and kind of messing around, talking with people, and just kind of the non, like, righty work stuff. So, mm-hmm. You know, 8 hours of dedicated game playing is a lot, you know, for any stretch of the imagination, right? So that ended up balancing out pretty good.
Cool.
Yeah. And so, we were alluding to something special coming out last week. People who watched on our Facebook, they would have seen that that was recorded, but there was a problem with the file such that it was not able to be used. So you missed out on a bonus level about XCOM, the one that we've been promising you. Can you guys kind of, like, summarize anything from that?
It was a lot of fun. It was me, Dennis, and Adrian, and Adrian knows a lot about XCOM. I try and research up, but it was a lot of fun though. We just kind of went through and we kind of had a guide, so we, you know, went through and talked about the different enemies, the different missions, kind of what kind of crews that we went with, and kind of what our rationale was for our strategy. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty good, kind of comparing notes as far as what worked and what didn't. So yeah.
Have any of you guys tried Team Sniper, just all snipers?
So I think Adrian's point was that snipers aren't the end all be all. They're really good, or they're like the phrasing he put was one round nukes, where it's mm-hmm. like they'll have an amazing shot like once or twice around, but then that's it. So he kind of favored more of, I think, the kind of mech troopers and heavy approach, but
okay.
And especially he also had a really good trick with the assault class, and hopefully this isn't too inside baseball, but there's a really cool trick that he mentioned where if you give the assault class ghost armor and mimetic skin, you have them run up to a group of aliens that don't notice them and just stand in the middle of them. Then you have another person run in and trigger them to run away. And as each one runs away, it triggers a reaction shot from the assault person, and he just takes out the entire team. And so that was just a really cool strategy that I hadn't heard of. But
nice.
Judging from the silence, I guess you guys probably haven't played this game a whole lot. So.
Nope. Yeah. I was trying to come up with some kind of joke about mimetic skin providing high impact resistance, but that's pretty lame because it requires you to know that impact is the font used on most meme images. Yeah.
I was just imagining running down mimes, but
I accept that joke, Cole.
Yep.
Checks out.
You guys didn't hang up on me that time, which is what usually happens. I edit all that out, the bloops.
All the boos are edited out, yeah.
No, I leave the boos in because those are funny. when it's just open revolt. Yeah. So, yeah, I was when Dennis sent me that that text message saying, "Hey, this happened," I was like, "Oh my gosh, that is heartbreaking."
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I was pretty bummed.
Anybody out there who has done any kind of podcasting knows that losing a file is one of the worst feelings you can have, because podcasting is not something that is fun to do over, right?
So, you can't
feign the enthusiasm over again.
Yeah,
right.
You can't pretend that you haven't, you know, said this exact same thing before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that we occasionally have to due to poor connections.
Well, yeah.
I don't do that.
Yes, you do. You've gotten better about it.
I'll make somebody else go.
You've taken in the past a strong stance because you feel like it's acting when I tell you, like, hey, can you pick up from so and so, like right there, because you kind of robot it out, so I can make a clean edit, right? But you've gotten better about it here in the, like, I'd say the past year or so.
Oh. Yeah. In the immortal words, Bill O'Reilly, "Fuck it, we're doing it live."
Pretty much. lightning crashes. So yeah, that's what's happening here. Otherwise, we've got kind of the usual gamut for you. We're doing some news in the brief section, where we've got a multiplayer about collector's editions, and we're rounding out with some what we have been playing in the grind. So let's go ahead and get started.
Yay!
The brief.
Yay! It's time for the brief. That's our news section. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would like to go last on this one.
Okay.
If that's okay.
That's fine. Okay. I will make a note of that with my handy pen on my index card. So I need to say the usual ritual. This is where we talk about things that are happening in the world as they relate to video games. And I will ask if anybody wants to be a non-Ben and volunteer to go first instead.
Oh.
I will be a non-Ben.
Okay.
All right, so apparently Google is getting into April Fool's Day a day early, and they have released now on Google Maps, in the lower left-hand corner, there is a little icon of Pac-Man, and if you click it, it converts the map and all of the roads into a Pac-Man maze with the ghosts and the dots, etc. And you can play Pac-Man on the map. So,
awesome.
It's a lot of fun. It's actually also, this is the one time when you should break the rules of never read the comment section, because going to the comment sections of any of the news stories that are discussing this is just people sharing the, like, craziest roads they've found in the world to play Pac-Man on.
Like, it's obviously, like, Lombard Street or whatever, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually one of them. So, one of the airports is kind of crazy. I think if you go to Boston, just none of the streets connect.
Yeah, because they're not on a grid. They're like London, which I would also assume is not possible, because it, you know, like a Pac-Man grid, it relies on there being a sensible place for you to go off the screen and come on the other side of the screen. And
right,
the same,
right.
You know, the same Y value. So
exactly. The one thing I'm kind of disappointed about, though, is it's actually not working from my computer, so I've been unable to defend the Duckfeed offices from ghosts.
See, that's the thing. I got really upset because, you know, I obviously went to my own address here in lovely Oakley, Cincinnati, Ohio, and it's a not enough street to play Pac-Man on. I got real upset because, yes, my power pellets are, you know, relatively unharmed. They're still around here. But all these fucking ghosts, I thought I was going to be able to deal with them. Come on, Google.
I know. I feel like maybe this is teaching you an important lesson that the ghosts rise up, now you know that you're living in an unsafe area.
I suppose. I mean, I can't count on Pac-Man to solve all my problems. But I have all these sweet, delicious cherries. It's all mine. All mine. I can flavor all the Robitussin I want.
Yeah, I think my favorite comment on one of these I saw is, "Man, now I've lost my voice from yelling waka 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 all day."
Oh God.
Oh, delicious, savory ghost meat. Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty good. So we're recording this on March the 31st. We generally record on the Tuesday before the Friday. The Friday as the episodes drop. And I'm seeing the April Fool's jokes dropping early. People hopping up on them goofs. And I'm getting like upset, but then I realize, oh, the internet exists in New Zealand, and they got to get them japes on too.
Oh, so okay.
They got to hop up on their japes. So it makes a little bit of sense, but it just feels like this entire week is forfeit. You can't believe anything you see.
You can't even believe us.
I always wondered, how do, Wall Street investors, what do they do this week? Because any news about a company you get may or may not be true.
I have no idea. I think that's why we see wildfall fluctuations. I think that's why I'm currently wearing nothing but a barrel with some straps over it and cereal boxes for shoes.
See, that always confused me, because like I look at all these artisanal barrels for brewing, and barrels are effing expensive. There is no way someone who's down on their luck is going to be able to afford an actual wood barrel.
No, see, the trick is barrels really, really expensive. Casks, well, that's a different story. And most of what you see around people are casks.
What's the difference?
I have no idea. I don't know, man.
I assumed you knew this. You sounded so confident. No,
I think a cask is smaller.
Okay. That's for your kids. Yeah.
Well, and then too, if they're already used, like if a winery or a brewery or whatever has already used the barrel and it's no longer fresh, then they sell them for a lot cheaper.
Mm. Except in the case of Jack Daniels. When you go there on a tour, you find out, they will sell, it's like $25,000 for a full barrel of whiskey, all bottled out from the same barrel. And then the barrel itself, like that whole thing together, I think they turn the barrel into a chair or something like that. But that is a way for people to blow an extra, to buy a whiskey car made out of the most mid-range whiskey you could possibly find.
That's just because they're putting a brand label on it. Yeah. It's not,
Yeah.
Branding.
Also, apparently a cask is a large barrel and always contains liquids. Sometimes down on their luck, hobos.
Yeah, sometimes you can have a barrel full of crackers, too.
Or monkeys.
Well, no, a barrel can be, either.
Yeah, or it could be a barrel of laughs, too.
Right.
Yeah, but that's more of just.
I do not support these jokes, Cole.
It's not even a joke.
I almost made the joke. With the barrel of crackers, I almost made the joke that it's not just white people, but
it's assorted. It's assorted mix and match parts. Oh man! So play Pac-Man on your maps. I'm sure it's going to be available for a little while. It's pretty fun because hey, it's Pac-Man. Jala, how about you? You got a story?
Yes, I have a story. So I will send a linky. Okay, so Nottingham, over in England, is now home to a 5-story national video game arcade center called Game City. It's at gamecity.org. Current exhibits are not just limited to controller or joystick-based games, but are also, they're predominantly hands-on with things like a Jumpatron machine, where the player sets the angle, mass, gravity, and power of a virtual environment, physically jumps onto a mat, and then watches the on-screen character fly off into space. There's also other elaborate games, like there's one that takes up an entire room that's right at the beginning of the exhibits that's called Mission Control, and two players can be in it at the same time, customizing virtual worlds in real time with large displays for everybody else to see. They can also scan in original drawings to appear as enemies in the game and adjust different events going on. And the Center itself holds events such as weekend game making jams, or, you know, has clubs come in or school programs. There's also coding workshops. The whole goal is really to move the gaming medium closer to cultural legitimacy as a whole, you know, like introducing it more as not just, you know, hey, these are things we do for fun, but you can actually use these as, you know, interactive learning tools as they have been used for years. Like, I remember going back to the computer lab and playing, you know, Number Munchers and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego and stuff, and, you know, actually picking up some random stuff from those. So, mm-hmm. So anyway, that's a thing. It's kind of neato. It's five stories. That's kind of huge. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I love the idea of those places. So, like, this sounds like an interactive science center. Except
yeah, it's more like a with a video game focus, but more like a science center is what it sounds like to me. But yeah. It calls itself a national video game arcade, though. So
neat.
Yeah, I especially like that they're, you know, doing not just like playing games or educational games, but also, you know, kind of technical outreach type things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that has kind of cropped up here in recent years. You hear about, especially on, you know, the podcasts that I listen to. I don't know if anybody else experiences this, but all these kind of installation games, you know, games that require a particular physical configuration in order to get the most out of, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking like even JS Joust had this for a little while, you know, the things like that, or kind of more recently, what is it, Two Rooms and a Boom? Or Keep Talking and Nobody Blows Up, something like that. One of those two, or both, are ones that I heard about here recently in like this past like GDC and PAX and all of that, of like Oculus Rift games that require these setups that you really don't have that much access to outside of like a convention kind of thing. So if there's a place for those kinds of experiences to kind of post up as a permanent, you know, in residence, right? That is that is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And especially since, you know, the approach that they're taking to it is such that it's not just the, you know, trying to market to people who just want to relax. It also has, you know, various other applications and, you know, whatnot. So that's the thing that I'm actually interested, because I'd really like to take a tour of that place at some point, just to see what all is there and what all you can do. You know, just the full scope of things, I guess, is what I'm saying. I mean, if it's five stories, then there's a lot to see and do. So,
yeah.
I'm just struck by the fact that apparently this implies that there is someone in the world who is the sheriff of Nottingham.
People just, like, huck batteries at him all day. Nobody wants you here. Yeah. Those installation games are dangerous. Did I ever tell you guys about my bad experience at a GameWorks?
No.
It was like my 11th or 12th birthday. Went to a GameWorks in Columbus, Ohio. And at the time, they had this kind of shooting game that you were strapped into this seat that raised up and down like various kind of levels. You had a screen in front of you and a gun mounted onto the chair. And as you shot more targets and scored higher, it would raise you up to the next level to like a different thing. So like, you know, more tickets, but you have this kind of interactive experience. Except what we didn't realize is that some people would get all the way to the top and the machine would stop and completely powered down. And, you know, you're trapped 30 feet in the air.
That sounds terrifying.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's how they get rid of the people that get too many tickets and buy all their good stuff.
Yeah, they launch them out the ceiling.
They scar them, yeah.
He's on the moon now. Yeah. And then they give you $10 in free credit so you don't sue, and then your parents rush you along because we don't have enough time for you to spend all that, so we need to make our movie or our dinner or something. So, hopefully that doesn't happen to any of these kids, and if it does happen, I believe, you know, we should petition for this place to be shut down. I almost said we should burn this place down, but I don't think that should happen, so.
Well, especially considering, like, one of the installation games you implied, or you suggested, was a bomb defusal game?
Yeah, I suppose.
And so, like, that going bad, I feel like that would make the nightly news.
Isn't that some kind of weird, like, Saw movie situation? where you take games and you make them real. Yeah,
I suppose so.
Yeah,
that stupid pixelated game with the washed up comedian. What's his name?
Well, okay, we're gonna camp out here. I want you to pull this up. Oh, you're referring to Takeshi's Castle on the NES?
No. I don't know. I got nothing. Yeah, no, there's a movie coming out just called Pixels.
Oh, Pixel, yeah, Adam Sandler, there you go, okay. No, I thought you were going to go with the timeless 2007 classic Stay Alive, starring, quote-unquote, Adam Goldberg, but he's only in the first scene, but they put him in all the trailers.
Adam Goldberg.
Yeah, but it does have one of the McPoyles in it from 2006. Fuck, I have to start that goof over, you guys. I said 2007. Oh, well.
Yeah, all right.
I've got a story here. So Zelda, which we thought was coming out in 2015, the one for the Wii U, has actually been pushed to 2016 with the team citing. We got pretty far into development, and we set things up in such a way that we were, you know, free and wide open and could do a lot more stuff than we usually do in a Zelda game. But that raised a lot of questions and a lot of opportunities for us to kind of make a better game. So it has slipped beyond its 2015 release day, or saying they're no longer making a 2015 release their number one priority, which shouldn't have been their number one priority regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, making a good game should be their number one priority. Which, you know, they're correcting. That's good. putting the cart before the opponent. Kind of alongside that, they're not going to have, you know, there's going to be no Zelda presence at E3 this year.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
So I feel like that could actually be pretty problematic for, Nintendo trying to sell Wii Us.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, like that. They were kind of counting on that as part of their... I mean, I don't know. Who knows what they were counting on? A lot of people were counting on that coming out this year to be like the banner title for their Wii U, which means that by the time this comes out, they'll be in their third year on a system before they have a Zelda game on it. Which,
right?
I mean, yeah, that happened with the N64, came out in 95, and then the Ocarina of Time came out in 98, and we see how that worked out. So, hey, guys, maybe everything will be okay.
yeah. I just mean from a strictly business setting, like, do they have any other games that like could move systems in that time?
I don't know. Well, what's funny is they're actually, like, as of the time we're recording this, man, we're doing everything we can to date this recording.
Yeah.
They're actually doing a Nintendo Live or one of their press release conferences or whatever, but as of right now, there is no update on any of the sites that I can see about what has been announced there. So maybe there's something sneaking up, creeping up.
Yeah. I feel like Nintendo Live's an awful name.
I mean, do you prefer that to Nintendo Live? Nintendo Live, please. I really like your games, please.
I don't know. It just strikes me as, like, it reminds me of, like, when I was in high school and watching, like, CNN Live or Fox News Live or whatever. It seems like it just kind of supports my image of Nintendo of, like, dude, guys, we just found out about this technology that's been out for years. We can now do live streaming of all our events.
Yeah, what's crazy is I think that there's an even worse one, which is PlayStation Underground. This is not another story, but I was just checking the PSN blog to see what the new PS Plus games were going to be, and apparently they're relaunching PlayStation Underground, but I have no idea what it is because the article has dropped off the front page.
Well, yeah, because it's underground.
Yeah, gotta keep it like a secret. Yeah, but that was
wait. Was this a past feature? This isn't ringing any bells at all.
Yeah, so PlayStation Underground was like a name for a bunch of demo discs that they put out back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, so I'm kind of bummed out because I was looking forward to that Zelda game, but it's like they always say, a delay lasts a couple of months or a year or whatever. A bad game is forever.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a similar situation with The Witness, too, right?
You know what? They slipped beyond their 2014. I have no idea. Like, I've given up hope. That is one of those things that eventually when I see it on the Steam front page, I will just buy it, no questions asked, because I want it. Do you have any details on that, Ben?
Oh, no. I just remember reading an article about Jonathan Blow maybe 3 or 4 months ago, but he was talking about how it was more he was thinking of it in terms of like 20 years from now, he would rather the game be a year late and have him be completely happy with it than have it be rushed to release. Yeah. So
I guess, yeah, a bad game is forever. Or in the case of, you know, Duke Nukem, forever is a bad game,
I suppose. Yeah, let's see here. Nothing about The Witness releasing. Man, now you've gotten, you reminded me that it exists, and now I'm sad.
Sorry,
distract me now, with a story.
Now you know how it feels every time someone mentions The Last Guardian on this podcast.
Like, I know what I'm doing to you when I do that.
I feel like wherever that gets released, we need to just have like a wah, 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 wah.
But when the game releases, I don't know if I can wait that long.
Oh, no, no. Or rather, when wherever The Last Guardian gets mentioned, rather.
Just make it so that whenever we say the name The Last Guardian, we replace it with a sound effect. Oh, boy, I'm not gonna promise that. I'm so not going to do that. Because that would be a lot more editing.
And something we could use against you.
Exactly. If you didn't want an episode to come out, you could just say it over and over again. Yeah. Oh, well. Ben, how about you? You said he wanted to go last.
Yeah, I kind of messed this one up. So I thought we were going to... Wait, never mind. I did not mess this up. We're immediately going into multiplayer, so this is a good segue.
Oh, yeah.
Segue.
I made a double mistake with the order of the show. But my news story is they announced... Of course, I'm going to do a Batman story. They announced a Batman Arkham Knight limited edition bundle with the PS4 so you can get your very own Batman console if you would like. It's silver. It kind of looks chromish. And there's a picture of... Or a silhouette of Batman on it.
Neato.
That's all. That's all. This,
I feel like light reflecting does not strike me as a Batman color.
This is far more tasteful than I expected it to be.
Were you expecting like a graphic novel type image of Batman, like mid punching somebody, or
I wasn't expecting full on Adam West Batman.
Okay. Yeah. Thinking of a little pow, yeah.
They just little pow and a new
Biff.
Yeah.
At some point that becomes pop art.
But you know what? I've read today that there is supposed to be an animated Adam West and like Batman cartoon coming up soon sometime.
Nice.
Like he's going to be doing the voice for it.
Yeah.
On that note.
I mean, I'm down. Like,
That's a pretty interesting. Oh, here's an interesting idea. It would totally undermine like Arkham Asylum if you just put Adam West as the main character and had
That was the thing that almost happened. I was listening to another podcast, the Comedy Button, which is one of those shows that I just kind of go through at double speed just to see what happens. It's not a tier one listen for me, but it's on there anyway. They're doing fine. But they were talking about the possibility of like they were this close to getting Adam West to perform all the lines from Arkham City.
Mm-hmm.
And overdubbing them or doing that for a bunch of scenes. So,
oh man,
yeah. But that would have that again would have undermined it. I think I would like this console a little bit more if they didn't write Arkham Knight on it.
Yeah.
If it was just Batman, that would be better, because who knows if Arkham Knight is going to be any good.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? And also, if they would have released it with the Batarang PS3 controller. Instead of the PS4, you know, the original prototype that they announced.
Bat trawler.
Yeah. The one that comes back, no matter how much you throw it away from you, because you don't want it in your house. It's like the monkey's paw.
I was going to say, you're kind of giving a tip to what you've been playing over the last week.
Oh, man. Yep. So that's,
I have to say, going to our multiplayer, the Adam West edition is something I would buy as a like collector's edition of Arkham Knight.
So that's something kind of funny, because they did that pretty well with Arkham City by putting in alternative skins, right? So you could be Batman mm-hmm. Beyond Batman, or you could be Batman the Animated Series Batman. Like they lovingly modeled all of those. But as far as I understand, and you know, double check my facts on this, because God knows I won't. But a lot of those were retailer specific pre-order bonuses.
Probably, although all of those, you know, eventually find their way into the game.
It's a neat treat for the fans. Fan candy, they call it. Sweet, sweet fandy.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we're talking about a question that was asked, and Dennis was so kind as to put up a query for you guys to answer, and I was so unkind as to navigate away from it. So you're hearing me kill time as I try and get back to that screen, which is, you know, not very respectful of you, but here we are. So multiplayer, do you guys put any stock in limited or collector's edition games? Which ones do you own, and which ones are your favorite extras? Answer by so-and-so and so-and-so. There are a lot of responses here, and I'm going to do something yep. unprecedented. Let's keep this section to about 25 minutes.
Ooh.
Okay. Yes.
So there we go. I think that is that is a reasonable amount of time. Let's see what happens.
This would be like a lightning round.
Well, I mean, we don't have to rush. I don't want to be like, hey, let's read these rapid fire. You know what? We're killing time. So
let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Jala, since you're gung-ho, tell us what Tanner says.
Tanner says, I have a Dark Souls 2 collector edition figure standing guard over my record collection shelf. Said shelf also has a fantastic original BioShock OST on vinyl, thanks to its baffling inclusion with BioShock 2's CE. I love cleaning the house to a Gary Scheinman nightmare.
I assume that is the composer of that.
I would assume yes. so.
Yeah. I feel like such a goof with my Dark Souls 2 Elite Edition or whatever figurine, because it is sitting on the table next to my television, and I've been showing my apartment. No, you know, I've not been showing it, but my landlord has been showing it, and people walk in, and all of a sudden I'm seeing my shit through their eyes. And so why does this weirdo have a statue of a knight? And he lives here alone? Okay. Not anyway, yeah,
we won't talk about all the figures on my shelves and things. We'll get to that.
I suppose we will. David, what's David say?
The world famous David says, I've done a handful of collector's editions for MMOs/expansions because I've wanted the in-game swag. WoW, Guild Wars 2, and I think a couple of EverQuest expansion packs.
I've got a statue or a figurine of Furiona Vi, the elf lady who's on the cover of all of the EverQuest
ever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's EverQuest boob lady. yeah, that is in a box of collectibles somewhere. You're both Guild Wars fans. Did you ever get either of those? I remember them having really expansive.
I have all of, actually, that's on my answer. I have all of the original Guild Wars and the Guild Wars 2 collector editions and the Skyrim collector edition. I have limited editions for Resi 4 and 6, but yeah, I have all of those, mostly because the original Guild Wars games all came with art books for every single one of the collector's editions, and that's one of the main draws that brought me to Guild Wars in the first place, was the art style versus something like WoW's art, which I don't like. And so that's why I actually bought those. Guild Wars 2, I have the collector's edition, and that included a Gigantor figure of Ritlock Brimstone, which is a big char, which is like a giant cat guy with horns, big, you know, huge warrior guy. And, for Skyrim, I have Alduin, the World Eater statue, sitting up there on another shelf. So I have a bunch of different figures on my shelves. I like figurines. And mostly, though, if it has an art book, that's going to be the main draw for me. Then figures and whatnot.
Do you find yourself going back to art books a lot?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I love them. As somebody who is an artist, I will pore over them, and I will go back to them and flip through them for, you know, any reason, number of reasons. Like, if I feel nostalgic about the game, like the original Guild Wars, which I don't play anymore, you know, I'll go back through the art and flip through it, or, you know, get inspiration for something related to that, you know, via looking through those. Of course, soundtracks and things like that I also enjoy, but you can get those pretty much as DLC these days.
Yeah.
So, but ironically, my favorite thing that was a collector's item was actually packaged with the regular, like, I think there was only one edition of Lunar 2 on the PlayStation, and it included a box with a cloth map, a copy of the pendant of the main, like, the female lead character, Lucia,
yeah,
and, you know, like, a hardcover art book, any number of different stuff was just all piled into this regular edition of this game. Which was released kind of like a collector's edition. I actually met a friend in college and, you know, hit it off with him and became buddies because he was wearing that pendant and I knew what it was. And so I was like, oh, Lunar, you know? Yeah. So
nice. Yeah, that might be one of the more valuable things that I own is the collector's edition of Lunar Silver Star Story.
Mm-hmm.
With that book and whatever stuff came inside of that.
Oh, and what's awesome is that when you pre-ordered it, you also got a Galleon punching puppet.
Yep.
And I had that for a while, but I ended up getting rid of it eventually, but I did have one for some time.
Yeah.
So.
What is a punching puppet?
It's literally a puppet that you can make punch like Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Which is funny because he's a mage. Like he's you know, the stereotypical evil sorcerer who's trying to summon the devil god.
Yeah. And that's the awesome thing about it.
As evil sorcerers do.
Yeah. Which is crazy because everybody knows the guy who summons the devil is the first one to be killed by the devil. Come on, guys. Just watch any TV. Watch any TV at all.
But, you know, the thing about Galleon is that dude just don't die.
I suppose. Did he carry over into the two?
Okay. He was, yeah. Yes, he carried over. He came back. So.
Yeah.
As mages, again, kind of do.
But he became a good guy in the second one. That is a complete side note. Moving on.
Yeah. So the only reason I ask you about art books is because I tend to kind of bounce off those real quick.
You know, it's a little bit different for me because I'm actually like an art person, like a painter. Yeah. So, you know, I like to refer to those.
Yeah.
Yep. Inspiration.
Reference and such. Yeah. I just, I try and cultivate the most off-putting coffee table. Actually, so I have like four volumes of Akewood comics on there. I've got the Dark Souls design works, and I have collected works of Zdzislaw Beksinski's paintings on there. People look at it, it's like, what the hell's happening here? What's going on? Ben, what does Ryan say?
Ryan says, one of the only collector's editions I have is for Stick of Truth. Nice. My little wizard Cartman overlooks my desk. Other than that, collector editions mostly seem like a money grab.
Yeah. I can see eye to eye with that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Depends on how much you love the thing.
True.
So.
True that. Let's see here. I'm going to give us a little bit of curveball because we have Graham Marcus in here wrote in via email. And if anybody wants to do that, that's at duckbeat.tv/contact. There's a little form there, and it all goes to me. Looking at this here, my experience with collector's editions has been odd. My first CE was for Kingdom Hearts 2, which featured an art book, but I'm not so hopeless that I'm interested in the concept art for Kingdom Hearts. Good on you, buddy. Later on, I got the director's collector's edition of Final Fantasy XII, which featured a mini documentary. But after hearing about all the drama behind the development of Final Fantasy XII, I didn't really care to see what the documentary had in store. The case art was beautiful, at least that it was. I bought Shin Megami Tensei, Devil Summoner 2, Raidu Kozunoha versus King Abaddon. Oh man, on a whim because it came with an adorable Jack Frost plush from the Michael Keaton movie, dressed up just like the eponymous Devil Summoner. So what you get, is a chibi snowman with the face of a jack-o'-lantern and these kicking sideburns. It's a great collector's item. So there we go. Of course, I was referencing the Michael Keaton masterpiece where Michael Keaton plays a blues musician in a Christmas song cover band. and he dies one night trying to get home to his family to spend time with his kid on Christmas Eve, and he's brought back in the form of the kid's snowman that he just built, and hijinks ensue.
It's really just like Birdman.
Yep.
If you don't think about it.
And I just today saw the episode of 30 Rock that Michael Keaton was in. So let the circle be unbroken. Yeah. That FF12 cover, I never watched the DVD that came with that, but it is a nice tin case, which is apparently enough to make a collector's edition worth buying. At least nowadays. Yeah. Let's see here. Jala, what's Brandon say?
Brandon says, I never pulled the trigger, but I always wanted the Fallout 3 CE with the bobblehead and lunchbox. I did get a cloth map from the original Neverwinter Nights game, but I don't remember if that was a special edition.
No, it was not.
Triggers pulled ever. We got it.
No, I remember because I bought the box of Neverwinter Nights and it had a cloth map in it. And
cool.
I was a young boy with not much spending money, so I didn't buy the collector's editions at the time. Yeah,
I would love a cloth map of Dark Souls. That would be something I would spend money on.
I believe that those exist. I have a cloth map of the world of Dark Souls 2.
See, but my understanding was that Dark Souls 2 didn't have the badass, like, everything's on top of itself and stuff like that, right?
No, it didn't have that. It was more of a sprawl, and the map on 2 was kind of a continent map from Dring Lake.
Okay.
Yeah. Man, I got a badass poster that shows the world of Dark Souls, like Lordran.
Yeah. Wait, did you get the largest size?
No, because it would be a real pain to frame is why I decided not to do that.
So the size you got, sorry, this is totally off topic. I'm debating buying it. The size you got, would you see any reason to get the larger one?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind paying a lot of money to frame it. And by a lot, I mean that print is $100 and framing something that is that tall, that is, you know, 60 or so inches, would cost you at least like a couple hundred more.
Sure.
Yeah, so I'm not a big enough Dark Souls fan to do that.
Yeah, I know. Like, I have a weird thing. Like, I'm not a huge fan of, like, I don't know. Like, video game, like, collectibles and art just don't quite sit with me. I don't know. But that, I feel like, just the design of it, I feel like, kind of, you know, like Jala was saying with the art books, is just... You know, it's more just really interesting to look at and kind of tells a story just by the image, as opposed to it, you know, having a relevance necessarily to martial art. Wow. I'm mixing up what I do with my life.
You're mixing up your enthusiasms. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Like going back to Brandon Goodrich's response here, I was not so much into the Fallout 3 Collector's Edition, but in the time that I've spent over at Gary Butterfield's places these past couple of years, going to the Portland Retro Games Expo, I'm always jealous of his Fallout New Vegas Collector's Edition because he has the bottle caps from the Sarsaparilla. Bottles, which I would really enjoy having, but you know, them's the breaks.
You can, there are people that make those. You can order those,
I suppose. Yeah, I'm not down for easy solutions. So I mean, like with that in mind, David, like how about you? Like
hence Dark Souls.
So with you, David, like is that pretty much your stance on collector stuff? Do you have any good finds? Are you opposed to them, you know, charging more money for them, etc.?
I would say I'm not opposed to them in general. Be honestly, before reading these responses where we've had, you know, have and will have a number of people that really enjoy them. They always struck me as kind of silly, like, but apparently I'm just, you know, just not the, you know, the target market or whatever. You know, I got the collector's edition for the first Guild Wars. Mm-hmm. The main thing of that is that was my podcasting headset for a long time. So yeah. I I don't think I never actually got past just getting stomped in Guild Wars PvP enough that Mike would help me at all. But I did end up, you know, getting my use out of it, I guess.
Yeah.
I suppose I also liberated the cardboard stand-up from the local game store that shall not be named. So I don't know if that counts.
Oh, the Guild Wars one?
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
I help you get that?
Yes, you did.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that was one of those things. I could, you know, if you wanted a standee, I could make it happen. As long as occasionally they went to sick kids, and I was not enough of a monster to step in and disrupt that. But you know, there was always a list, and friends would get on the top of the list. You know, I got the hookup. It's good.
So, I think I got the collector's edition of Resident Evil 4.
So both you and Jala have mentioned the Resident Evil 4 collector's edition. Does that mean that you had the chainsaw controller?
No, it does not, unfortunately.
No.
I did have the chainsaw controller at some point or another. Yes, I did. But that wasn't... Was that something that came with the collector's edition? I don't remember.
It might have been like an extra tchotchke kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it was an extra thing because they had like a cell or something of different characters inside of the Steelbox version.
Right, yeah.
So that's what they had for the special edition for that.
Yeah, and I would say for me, probably the special edition that kind of most I enjoyed was the... Halo 2 one that just the game manual was from the Covenant perspective.
Oh, yeah.
That I don't know. I kind of feel like I wish collector's editions were a lot cheaper and just had kind of fun stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to models that, you know, obviously a lot of people like but just don't do much to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would pay more for like a steel case and like something fun for like $5 or $10 more.
Yeah. Huh.
I feel like the Resident Evil 4 collector's edition should have came with a bag that you can't open and shakes until you stab it.
Let's see here. David, you're next on the rotation. What's James say?
James said, I've had a few, but they're generally all stored away. I just can't find the right spot in our living room for a battle damage batarang from Arkham Asylum, or a Diablo skull with embedded gem USB stick.
Yes, I would be surprised.
I feel like with the batarang, you just embed it in the wall and then like deny all knowledge of it to anyone that, you know, asks.
Oh, that? You want some coffee? Let's go to another room. No, I'm not pushing you. I'm not pushing you. Go, Lou. Yeah, move. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. That's one of my problems with these, as I quickly get away from buying physical games and ends up being a logistical hassle.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little surprised. Does Steam ever do collector's editions? Like, is that a thing?
Mostly they include like season pass kind of stuff. Like there is like a deluxe edition kind of thing, but it mostly includes extra content, right?
Sure. I know. I almost feel like some of these they could just be a little bit more intelligent about in terms of like, you know, like if it's a game that's known for, you know, having amazing soundtrack like Bastion or Transistor,
that's,
you know, something
that's
like that.
That's usually an option. Like Steam is pretty good about like saying, hey, for a couple dollars more, you can get the soundtrack for this thing, which is an option I almost always take.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I kind of wish more the... I realize the options. I just mean more. I feel like some of the collector's editions maybe could learn some constraint and be like, that's probably good enough. Or like, you know, if it's a game with great art, maybe an art book. But, you know, not we're just going to throw every random thing at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that you're generally better off by presenting something that is found in the universe of the game than, you know, something that feels promotional for it, right? I think that's why the Fallout special editions feel very successful.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I can see that. The one I always regret not buying is the Feelies pack for Kingdom of Loathing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Chat like some just random stuff from the game.
Get your evil lime. That's the thing, right? I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
The saber-toothed lime.
Yeah. I just wanted any kind of recognition. So I didn't feel like I was losing my fucking mind. Okay.
Dang it! I missed an opportunity. That's gonna set our gaslighting back at least a month.
Yep. Oh no, Cole has confidence in his reality. Let's see here, Ben. What does Brian say?
Brian says, "I bought the Morrowind Collector's Edition when it first came out. I lost the Ordinator figurine somewhere in my many moves since then, but the art book and soundtrack are on the shelves behind me, and I've framed the map and hung it on the wall. Nice. I have several WoW expansion Collector's Editions, but they pretty much sit on the floor next to my computer desk. The art books are pretty, but I haven't gotten much use out of the other extras with it. I also have a StarCraft II Collector's Edition, but I bought it for the WoW pet, and I'm pretty sure that opening it now to see what's inside is the first time I've ever opened it. I had it sent to my parents' house since they were living in Japan at the time, and they opened it and sent me the code. Figures and art books are probably the main reasons why I get collector's edition. Maps are great, but I don't have the wall space to display them all, and soundtracks get ripped to MP3s and then thrown in the back of the case. Figurines I can set up on my computer desk, and they're a constant reminder of fond gaming memories.
Yeah.
And then I believe he includes a picture of one of his maps.
Yeah, it's the map of Vardenfell from Morrowind.
That's a
big map. Holy shit. I mean, at least if the scale is to be believed.
Huh. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, oh, that's that is an attractive piece of art. You know what? I think I have the map from Oblivion. I bought the Oblivion Collector's Edition.
See, back when those games were coming out on PC, I wasn't into buying collector's editions for stuff yet, so I missed out on those. Although I would have loved to have them.
I'll tell you what, I've got the Oblivion Collector's Edition that came with a septum. Mm-hmm. You know, so it can separate your nostrils from each other. No, it's the coin of the realm.
Yeah,
and that was really good. I think that I've used it as a guitar pick when I was really really drunk before. you know, because it was lying around. And I, you know, that counts for something. You know, a bunch of sets of broken strings at the very least. Yeah, and apparently my browser is going to freak out, so I don't have the. I don't have this open up. So Ben, I'm going to ask you, what about you? How do you treat collector's editions?
I don't think I have bought a single collector's edition. So I'm kind of out of the loop as far as that stuff goes. The one comment I have to say is when a game comes out with a collector's edition, I feel like it's kind of presumptuous. I feel like a game should only make collector's editions like after they've been successful, you know?
Oh, like for the game of the year edition kind of thing?
Maybe something like that, yeah. It just seems like, I don't know, like if you include like a whole bunch of like fanfare or like maps and stuff like that, it seems like you're already declaring that your game is really great, but it, I don't know, it hasn't yet been proven, maybe?
I mean, how do you feel about, you know, most of the time when you see these big ones, they're part of a long-running series?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, there's something about a collector's edition for Fallout 3 that feels less mm-hmm. presumptuous than like even a collector's edition for Arkham Asylum before we knew that was going to be a great game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but even that, like, you know, trades on the fact that Batman is a cool thing that people agree is good.
Yeah.
You know, so
like the collector's edition from the Order 18, you know, something.
Yeah, that's super Goof Troop, I think. I'm not down with that one bit.
Yeah. But that said, the Fallout 3 one sounds really awesome with bobbleheads and lunchboxes.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I wish I had enough faith in the series when that came out so that I would have just bought it. But
mm-hmm.
Oh well.
Hindsight 2020.
That it is. Hindsight is 2020 or $200 if you're on eBay right now.
Yeah. Pretty much.
2019 with plus one, I don't know, perception. Yeah,
I guess. Let's see here. That was one Mr. Brian. So I'm going to continue with Jacob. He writes, and I have both the Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 Collector's Editions. While I love those, my favorite CE is the Dead Space 2 Collector's Edition. Oh, that cover art was glorious. Yeah, that was a pretty good one. The cover for the Dead Space 2. I don't know. So this kind of segues into mine real nicely. I decided to go digital with Bloodborne, as opposed to getting the collector's edition, because aside from the embarrassing statue from Dark Souls 2, I don't feel like I derived an awful lot out of having the collector's edition from that. And just kind of in general with, you know, with digital coming down, I don't see an awful lot of use for that. There was a time in the past when I bought the collector's edition just because I wanted to have the nice, the nicest version of a thing that was coming out.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Just like, yeah, the, you know, especially because I tended to buy things that I wanted to support, which is just fine. But like, I think that even that turned as early as, you know, 2004 when I was, when I got the Halo 2 collector's edition and kept falling asleep in the middle of the documentary that came with it about the making of it. It's like, oh, we reached this milestone. So we went and had a party. Okay, cool. A bunch of game developers having a, having a party. Because for a while, the collector's editions kind of felt like a stealth way for them to pilot making more expensive versions of their games, like testing out, will people pay $60 instead of $50 for these games? And that was probably a huge reason why things went up, you know, in price. Because
so you're saying I can blame you?
Yes, directly. write all your letters to me if you think that games are too expensive. And, you know, just anything. Like, if you feel that a game is bad, if you feel slighted in any way, just write us and contact us about it. So
it's probably Duckfeed's fault.
Yes, it is probably us. So if you're not 100% satisfied with Bloodborne, yeah, we'll hear that. That's cool. Okay. Yeah.
Well, we're almost to the grind.
Oh, man. So we're coming up on the last one here. I want to get one more response in. So, Jala, what does Franz say?
Franz says, when I ordered Bioshock, they sent me the special edition by mistake. The Big Daddy figurine makes a fine paperweight. I do love me an art book or soundtrack, though.
Man, I should have sent my Big Daddy in for re-tipping. Yeah, because you guys know that, right? The drills, they made them with a fragile material, and a bunch of them were breaking off. So I've got a tipless daddy.
Oh my!
What?
It's too easy.
I'm teeing it up. Come on, grand slam, guys! Grand slam.
You're really just going to softball that one in there?
Yep. Yeah. So that is the promised 25 minutes. Guys, I feel really bad for leaving you guys off, anybody who is here, but there are so many more. And
yeah, and some of them are like gigantic half-page responses.
Yeah, yeah. So let's take that as a small measure of tough love. We wanted to make sure we got the people who hopped on it first. But yeah, as this kind of goes forward, you know, that is a sensible way to handle it, I think. So, if you're legitimately, upset about that, let me know and we can work out something better, but that is, just a way we're going to manage the recording time. But yes, thank you so much, everybody. Even if we didn't read your response for writing in, the same thing always applies. We're blown away by people's participation, so much so that we have to make changes to the format of the show, to accommodate it. But if you want to be a part of this, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and you can see those responses, or those questions rather, when they go up on Tuesday afternoons.
Right. But you can also see the responses too, and they're kind of like Easter eggs now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep. Go there, be a part of the conversation. Make these things live on. Yeah.
The grind.
Now it's time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past two-ish weeks. Yeah, past two-ish weeks or so. So I'm going to ask you, Jala, to get us started, because you are our current guest here today.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been moving, so I haven't been able to play any really big games. I did play a teeny weeny bit more of A Story About My Uncle, but not too much more of that, mostly because everything got packed up. And then I was moving in the rain, so I didn't have the chance. But it was actually kind of fun. Aside from slipping in a puddle and dropping my bed in a puddle, that was not fun. Anyway, so games. I have played a couple of iOS games, one of which was Sorcery. I listened to the WAF episode about game books and about the talking about, you know, Sorcery Game, and then, you know, everybody talking about 80 Days. I actually bought the whole Inkle pack, but I haven't gotten to 80 Days yet, or the second Sorcery Game, but I did finish the first one. Another one that I played is another iOS game that's a visual novel style thing, just kind of along those same themes. It's called Long Story. It's an iOS game that's released in installments. The first chapter is free, and the second one is $1.99. It's the third chapter is in the process of being made, so it's, you know, in the works right now. And this one is kind of silly and cute. It's a zany high school story basically centered around a mystery that your character is trying to solve. Your character has been away in school in France for a year and came back and, you know, only knows a couple of people in the new school and, you know, happens to have a locker that is notorious for reasons that you don't know, you know, the whole story behind, but apparently the person who had it before you had been bullied and you're trying to uncover what exactly happened to her while also dealing with your own affairs and things like that. The interesting thing about it is that you can be either a boy or a girl, and it does have, you know, like options where you can date whoever you want to, but like it's gender friendly. You can date whoever you want to. There's even a gender neutral character that is just a person in a mascot suit, and you don't know if they're male or female.
So it's a furry game.
Yeah, and so, like, and well, no, it's not a furry game. That particular person is in the mascot suit and is never seen outside of the mascot suit. So, like, you know, but you can actually go with the mascot person, you know, to, like, a picnic and stuff like that and, like, actually spend time with them and develop a relationship with the and they don't talk either. They just kind of gesticulate, so it's kind of ridiculous.
So this is actually a stealth pilot for Five Nights at Freddy's, you know.
Yeah, basically. So, but anyway, another thing that I really do like, though, is that the main character and several of the other characters are all minority races. It's not just like all, you know, Japanese people, you know, as if it were made in Japan, or all, you know, Americans, like, you know, white WASPs, you know, Americans. They're not that kind of thing. There's a Burmese boy, a Filipino, and any number of other things. And then, you know, then you've got your typical blondes and whoever else in there, too. But there is, you know, like the range of different ethnicities represented. And then, of course, it's gender friendly. So, you know, that's really cool. And you even have like an internet buddy. So you actually text in the game back and forth with your internet buddy, too. So that's kind of neat.
It's weird how successful that can sometimes feel.
Yeah. And in this particular game, it, you know, like it works out pretty well. And the first chapter didn't really interest me, to be quite honest, but because I was like, okay, I can't just drop it now. I'm going to go ahead and play the second chapter and see where it goes, because this is just the first chapter. Let me just see. So I played the second chapter of it, and it actually developed the characters a lot more, because the first one's kind of like an introduction to all the characters and what's going on. And I actually liked it a lot better and really wanted to continue playing by the end of the second chapter. And of course, now I have to wait for the third one, but it's actually kind of neat little visual novel type game, pretty relaxing. And, you know, like I said, since I've been moving and stuff, it's been nice to have something laid back to just kind of chill out and play. Between that and Sorcery, it's just been kind of laid back games. So,
yeah, I forget, what's your relationship with visual novel kind of games? Like, have you dug into them before?
Nope.
Nope.
And that was actually another reason, because you talk about them a lot. And so I'm like, you know, I should play that type of a game, because I haven't played that type of a game before. So, yeah. So I decided I was going to do that. And another thing that I've done is actually played Tablet. It is a type of Toffle game. Toffle is a type of Norse board game that there is actually a whole family of games. It's mistakenly called Viking chess. It's a war game that is, you know, based on like a king, you know, like the white pieces are a king and the defenders, and the black pieces are the attackers who are trying to take the king, you know, and that's the basis of it. But it runs a lot faster than chess, and the rules were never written down because the Vikings, you know, only used the runic language for their ceremonies and magic and stuff like that. So The rule sets, therefore, have split off into a billion different directions, and there's a bunch of different versions of this game. But there is an iOS app for free that's just called Tablet, and you can play that. There's also one...
Can you spell that for me?
It's Tablut.
Oh, okay. And, I was right.
And so you can play Tablet on your tablet.
Exactly. And that particular app, you can only play versus the computer or pass and play. However, there is another one called King's Table, which is actually the English translation of Hnefatafl, which is the one that I really got into. And King's Table is, I think, $1.99 or something like that. But you can play it via the Game Center online with people or pass and play. But there is no option on that one to play against a computer. So you have to have a live player to play with on that one. And unfortunately, I haven't had anybody actually get that to work with their Game Center yet for me to play with them. So I'm kind of waiting for somebody to get that up so I can play it with them.
It's funny that you say that's called Viking Chess, because we have a guy at work who has kind of introduced us to this game called Cube.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of like a toss game where you're throwing kind of these wooden rods at kind of wooden blocks. It's like a lawn kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It's really great. Like it's a fantastic game, especially if you're kind of lit on a summer's day. And he said, "Oh, this is called Viking Chess," which makes makes a little bit of sense because it has strategy to it, mm-hmm. but also it is you're throwing shit at shit. So when you said that, my ears perked up.
Well, the thing about it too is that I've been playing, because I got a Hnefatafl board like on a piece of leather with like some stones and stuff to use, like a, you know, like a primeval, you know, take it anywhere kind of game board. And I actually have been going to a cafe here in town that serves alcoholic coffee and just chilling out and playing with friends, you know, just playing Hnefatafl, because it plays really fast, so you can be done in 5 minutes or 20 minutes tops. Like it's not very fast. It's not very slow, and it's not really drawn out. So it's not like chess, in that chess usually takes a lot longer. Mm-hmm. But it is still a strategy game that's, you know, based around the king and whatnot. So
yeah.
So anyway, that's what I've been playing.
So for sorcery, like, were you kind of like spoiled or ruined, you know, by playing by listening to the episode of WoW? Kind of dedicated to that particular title in detail, or?
No, not really, because what happened was I was just listening. What usually happens is I will listen to the episode, and I will do so while I'm working, so I don't, like, I listen, and there are parts that I remember very vividly, and there are other parts, because I'm multitasking, that kind of slip from my memory. So, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't remember everything that was going on, and, you know, like, everybody's choices are going to be different. Like, I decided I was just going to completely avoid every town I could possibly avoid, and, you know, did a bunch of different stuff, and, you know, just forge off into the wilderness, and, you know, so I had some interesting experiences, and befriended an assassin, and, you know, dodged a witch, and, you know, had an imp follow me all the way to the end of the game and whatever. Yeah. So
I would definitely encourage you to check out 80 days. I mean, we talked a lot of sugar about it on the show, but that is a really great it's the best representation of a game book I've seen.
First off, I bought the Inkle pack, so it has all of those in there. So it has the second sorcery game, it has the 80 Days game in it, and some other one that's like a pirate game. I don't remember the name of it.
It's really not that good. I don't like it that much.
Okay, well, I bought it in the pack, so whatever. But in either case, I have all those, so I will be playing the other ones eventually. But partially, I picked it up because I listened to the WAP episode, partially because you guys were talking about it here, and so... You know, I'll be playing those eventually, too.
Nice. Fantastic. Well, yeah, I don't know that I have any other questions about those. Sounds like you've been busy kind of expanding your horizons, which is good.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I have a couple. I played a whole bunch of XCOM the week before this week to prepare for the show. So that is ground that is well treaded on, so I won't mention anything about that. But I've played two games in the past week. One of the games I picked up because Adrian had recommended it heavily on last week's episode, and that is Helldivers, which is, I think...
Oh, that looks great.
Yeah, I think somebody's played it here. Cole, did you play it?
No.
Okay. I can't remember if Dennis played it. Anyway, maybe no one's played it. It's just a multiplayer game online. You can play it single player, but it's kind of like short 10-20 minute rounds. It's a pretty small size game. It's cost $20. So judging from my opinion of it, you might want to wait until it drops a little bit more in price before you pick it up. It's good, but I played it in about 2 days' time, and I got in buying the game, they give you a free 2-day pass to PlayStation Plus, since I'm kind of adamant about not buying that. So I used that and then played it online, and it was fine, and it's good, and I leveled up to, I think, level 17 out of 20. But I'm pretty much done with it now. It was good, and it was fun, but... I don't know. It was pretty bite-sized, so I feel like it's more of a $5-$10 game worth of experience than a $20.
So this is like a top-down shooter kind of thing, right? It's like an old style arcade game.
Yeah, and it looks similar to like the presentation of XCOM, which was kind of a nice transition, I guess. But the premise of it is you're dropped in the middle of a map in an alien world, and you'll have a random amount of objectives to do. And it could be a single objective. It could be up to like 5, depending upon what the difficulty is. And then you'll play against one of 3 different alien races. And the aesthetic of it is very much like Starship Troopers, where it's very like pro-America. I believe the planet that you're on is called Super Earth.
And, nice.
Yeah. And you're advancing the human race by, killing all these aliens. And there's like a lot of like pro Super Earth propaganda and stuff. And anyway, so I don't know. It's a cute aesthetic and it's a good backdrop. But yeah, you pretty much do one of 3 or 4 missions throughout each drop. And then you have to get evac'd out of there. And there's a couple of the missions like vary in like how fun they are, I guess. But the evac part is really fun in each situation. So one of the mechanics of the game is whenever you need to call in any sort of airdrop of like different like you can think of it similar to like Call of Duty, where you have like different perks that you can call in, or whenever you need to evac, the way it works is it'll display a series of maybe like up to 9 or 10 characters of up, down, left, right on the D-pad. And you have to press that sequence in on the D-pad, but there's no pause menu at all. So all of this is happening in real time. So it's kind of, you're frantically pressing it. And if you get one wrong, you have to start over and do it again. So it's a nice little mechanic for making it kind of high pressure. But you enter in the code to do an evac, and then you have to defend an area for 1.5 minutes before the ship will come in and land. Once it does, if you can get to the ship, then you can get airlifted out, and it's only around for like maybe 10 or 15 seconds. So if you're in a tight spot and you can't get there, then you're kind of out of luck and have to call it again. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of cool mechanics in it. The only thing is that it kind of gets old somewhat quickly. Like there's not enough variation between the 3 different alien races to make it feel like they're completely different parts of the game. It kind of runs together. And a lot of the missions, since they reuse the missions over and over, like blow this thing up or escort this person, a lot of that gets old kind of quick too. It's fun for like the first maybe hour or two that you play it, but unfortunately after that, I kind of lost interest in the game. But yeah. Any questions about that game?
Yeah. I mean, it looks pretty good. I've heard a lot of great stuff about it. Like, does the personality carry it?
I don't think it can. It's a charming game, but it only carries it so far. But yeah, I don't know. Some of the multiplayer stuff can be kind of cool. I played, like, there is one thing they had over the weekend where they had like maybe a 3-hour challenge to like defend a home planet, and so it was basically double experience. If you played at one particular planet, and then they had like a meter of like the aliens' progress that would just naturally go, and they have a meter of like the humans' progress, which fills up as people defend the planet and play the mission over and over again. So it's kind of cool that you can contribute to that or whatever, but the only thing is the contribution that you have is so small that it hardly feels like you're doing anything. So that was kind of a bummer. One of the cool things, one of the other reasons why I kind of got tired of it too, is I was able to play on the highest difficulty after playing it for about a day or so, and I was able to like complete a few of the missions, like and do all the missions that I needed to do. So I feel like I kind of beat the game in a day's time. So it was kind of disappointing, but it was a lot of fun though, doing that for the first few times, because you're playing with other people online and it's very frantic, because basically the way they handle difficulty is they just make a whole bunch more people attack you, which I guess is not like a novel concept or anything, but it's a lot harder to get the missions done. So there's a lot more of scrambling about, but yeah. Anyway, I've talked enough about that. Helldivers.
Yeah. That looks like a lot of fun. It's, you know, the same team that did Magicka, which is pretty epic.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, I feel bad saying this, but now that I have it, it's kind of something I'm counting on. That's one that seems really likely to, in 3 months, come available on PS Plus.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it'll be one of those situations where we're going to hear it, you know, we're going to hear about it on the show well after it, you know, is relevant. And also, you know, it's kind of like,
the
norm
for the show.
Yeah, hey, here's this game that everybody got for free. Let's talk about it. Yeah.
The other game I have been playing, there's one more, is Alien Isolation, which
I've been on a alien kick.
Yeah, everything is related to aliens.
This one you cannot kill the aliens as easily in. So I actually have not seen an alien yet. I've only played, I got this only a couple of days ago, so I've only played it for maybe about 30 minutes to an hour. And so right now it's in the building tension mode.
Yeah.
And it's very much like a Dead Space game where in Dead Space you see an alien in the first few minutes. In this one I haven't seen anything, but I'm already like jumping and already nervous about what's going on. So it seems good so far. It's basically, think of the aesthetic of Riddick when it first came out, Chronicles of Riddick, where it first person, but the graphics look pretty nice. And then the gameplay of Dead Space, where you're walking around a kind of empty ship and it's kind of scary. So yep.
Yeah. No, I feel very bad that I haven't played that yet, because that was one of the standout horror games of last year that I just never got time to really get around to.
Yeah. I will try and get around to it this week and let you know how it is.
Yeah, let me know how you feel about the length on it, because most of the kind of commentary and criticism that I heard was that it actually goes on for way too long. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know that, you know, just re your Helldivers conversation, you are kind of in the camp of a longer game is a better experience.
It depends. Some games can wear out their welcome, but yeah. I feel like that's kind of a thing with the Dead Space games too, where it's like the first half of the game I'm really into, and the second half is just like, all right, I'm ready for it to be done now.
Yeah, I never got that about Dark Souls 2, or not Dark Souls, Dead Space 2, DS, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because I feel like the back half of Dead Space 2 is phenomenal.
Yeah, I do like the credits, how they handled that.
Yeah, that is pretty good, how they handled the credits.
Yeah. One thing that I was thinking about with Alien Isolation is like you'll walk down a hallway and they'll have like 3 or 4 events that are all either startling events or something like, I don't know, big happening or something happening to the other characters. So it's like they take a trivial aspect of like walking 100 feet and stretch it into like 5 to 10 minutes of gameplay. So I don't know.
I think one of my favorite ideas I heard, just for silliness and maybe effectiveness, is someone advocating they played Alien Isolation with their pet cat locked in the room so that would periodically attack them.
There's a couple of cool things that they did with this. I don't have any of them, so I can't do them. But if you have a PlayStation Eye, it'll track your head, so you can do things like peek around corners, or I think like look around to a limited extent.
Cool.
And then one of the cooler things too is I can't remember if it's with a microphone or also through the PlayStation Eye, but it'll listen to the noise that you're making. And if you make any noise, the alien will find you. So, like, the noise that you make will alert the alien. So that sounded like it was a pretty cool thing. But it would suck if, like, you have a neighbor that whose dog barks or something like that. You know, like no. But
dang yeah. it, dog.
I always knew you would be my undoing, dog. Yeah. Huh? What was it? There was an NBA game where they had the Kinect listen to you, and if you swore, they would penalize you.
Make you sit on the bench.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
Well, yeah. but you know, it's a nod to realism, right? Just realism is not always fun.
I think that's cool.
But yeah.
While I'm thinking of it, I just want to do one throwback to last week's episode since it is lost in the ether. But one thing that a lot of our listeners did that we had not done, but sounds like an awesome idea, is a lot of people would name their soldiers in XCOM after loved ones, like their family and friends.
So they would be more motivated to keep them?
Yeah, or to make it like especially emotionally devastating when they die.
Oh,
like,
man.
Yeah, I don't know. So it seems like an interesting way to play the game, but I already have a hard enough time when somebody dies who I haven't personally named. So,
yeah,
it's like the FTL approach.
Yeah.
Except, you know, with less inevitable death.
Man, if you guys only knew how often you suffocated. I'm lucky that I don't have that voodoo computer anymore. Things got weird. Keep me updated on Alien Isolation, because that is one that I would like to make a priority, especially with Amnesia coming up and Outlast being in the new Humble Bundle.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
All right.
So David, I want to hear yours, because I'm kind of anticipating it.
Yeah, the only thing I've been playing has been Bloodborne. I've got to say, I have really, really mixed feelings about it.
Okay. Start with the positive.
Huh?
Start with the positive.
Sure. I really like the setting. I mean, Lovecraftian steampunk vampire hunters is...
It's not steampunk.
What? Yes, it is.
See, I thought it was steampunk too, because, you know, when you fire it up, you have the option to give your guy shitty monocles. But there's no steam power in the game. Like it is strictly Victorian.
You have mechanical transforming weapons, weird like gear driven guns, mechanical elevators, etc.
So it's like gear punk.
I would say I would make the argument that it is steampunk and all, at least basically steampunk, and also uses a lot of plot elements that are usually only used in steampunk, like the Victorian setting.
David did not make it to episode 100.
No, that's how Cole didn't make it to episode 100, because his brain exploded.
Wait.
So are you saying that Charles Dickens was a steampunk author?
No. I'm saying particularly. I guess I should preface that in saying mostly talking about video games, and I would say I would say video games, that generally speaking, that's not a particularly popular time period for games, except for steampunk, from what I've seen.
Yeah, but like,
so my basic argument I'm saying is, even though I would agree it's not heavily steampunk, I would say because it uses so many elements that are associated with it, has that feel.
Yeah, but like, but steampunk is almost always like vaguely utopian about how great it is to be white. like white and rich.
That's a very specific type of steampunk,
okay.
And not one that I personally go in for. It depends. There's different takes on steampunk, and that's probably the most common take, but definitely not the only one.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things. Like, I was initially kind of put off because I went into this game completely blind. right? I had no idea what to expect other than kind of some vague notions of, you know, it being a Victorian setting, and, you know, like a werewolf story, right? And, right, you know, with those two things in mind, I was expecting more of a Brotherhood of the Wolf, and I was very satisfied with that. However, I was given pause. You can hear about this in the Bloodborne First Impressions episode of Bonfireside Chat, but I was given pause when in the creator character, you had the option not only give your guy a monocle, but also crazy gear goggles, which I was like, what are we in for here?
But yeah, so basically, yeah, the setting, like that general mock-up are, you know, all things I like. Yeah, I really like kind of the Van Helsing, you know, approach to
swinging on ropes,
killing dudes, and you know, I like this some of the steampunk stuff. I really like the kind of I guess you could say Lovecraftian elements. You know, not so much, at least so far, the Cthulhu mythos, and more the kind of weird science type stuff.
Yeah, like that is a verboten topic of discussion for me because I don't want to spoil anything.
Sure,
but like you are not wrong to see DNA of that crop.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so I really enjoy that, and I also feel like just even beyond the basic premise, at least so far, I like a lot of the things they're doing with the with this story. It seems like, I don't know, I like that it seems like they're trying to do things to make it like somewhat more creepy than or more, I don't know, disturbing or whatever you want to say than like Dark Souls was.
I mean, it's explicitly a horror game, which is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, like, so far, I haven't seen anything I would say explicitly horror, although I guess if you had to give it a genre that, does it later on get to be more overtly, like, horror?
Yeah, it's a little bit like Resident Evil 4 in that it goes through shifts, which, okay, you know, again, I don't want to give any kind of like, you know, spoilers away, but you're starting out with kind of the angry villager motif, and you're moving, you know, kind of quickly through that as the story unfolds before you,
right? Sure. Okay.
And so, you know, I don't want to say that anything gets as like crazy intense as an Amnesia game or whatever, but it's definitely there, and it is they do things intentionally to, if not outright disgust you, at least make you feel unsettled.
Yeah. So there's some weird stuff with that. The doll is creepy as heck.
Did you manage to wake her up? Because last time we talked, I saw you commenting, you hadn't figured out how to level up yet.
Yes. No. I figured that basically. I'm pretty sure what I'm about to say is not spoiler. I've beaten the first boss. And I've unlocked all of the, I believe, all of the shortcuts in the, you know, kind of area it locks you in before the second boss.
Right.
And at least according to the wiki, I've gotten every item pickup in that area. So I'm currently, for the last 3 days, have been trying to beat the second boss.
Yeah.
Which we'll get on to some of it to begin with, but later on. But yeah, so I've woken her up, and you know, I've noticed there's you know, there's some things where, you know, occasionally when you return to the dream, she'll be doing different things, which is kind of interesting.
And that's something that goes back even to Demon's Souls as
is
well.
It?
Yeah, the and happens in Dark Souls 2 as well. Your level up lady is just kind of like occupying her time in the hub world.
Yeah. Yeah.
The doll hands are pretty upsetting.
Yeah.
For people who are listening, like what the hell are they talking about? A doll in the hub world of Bloodborne, there is a bigger than human sized realistic, like gothic Lolita doll,
okay,
who is kind of brought to life by this, you know, magic or sorcery or kind of like dream logic or whatever, who kind of speaks of you adoringly as like her creator, and you, you know, interact with her, you speak with her in order to channel your blood echoes. Blood echoes are the replacement for souls. So you are taking in kind of the memory of this blood that you've absorbed in order to power yourself up through her. So when we refer to her, like this is for all intents and purposes a humanoid, but you see the joints, and it's very much, you know, even for a game that has realistic depictions of people, it is very much Uncanny Valley. With her,
very purposely. Yeah. So that's weird. The wheelchair dude's commentary on her, it's creepy as hell.
Yep, that's one of the things that stuck out to me most in the first hour of the game.
So yeah. I have a question.
Yeah.
How much is the gameplay like Dark Souls and Demon Souls?
Yeah, about that. Imagine Dark Souls and make the gameplay crap.
Oh, man, what?
Ooh.
I really dislike the way they've redone combat.
Okay, so you don't like that they've made it more aggressive, like fast-paced kind of
thing? I don't like that they've basically made it a clunky version of Devil May Cry with QuickTime events bolted on.
QuickTime? There's no QuickTime events at all in the game.
Yeah, your left-hand weapon is just a QuickTime event.
That's like a Bayonetta. That's like a Platinum Dodge button. Like, that's just a way for you. It's the exact same mechanic that you had with a shield.
In Dark Souls, the game didn't beat me over the head with you have to use your shield to parry.
Yeah, it did. You could only parry with a shield.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, but parrying was a mostly optional mechanic, at least as far as I got.
So I kind of ran into this too, because I played relatively conservatively on Dark Souls, right? Like hid behind shields and, you know, just kind of like, I never really got beyond that phase for however much time I played. Most people tend to go to either dual wield or, two hand a weapon or what have you. And so that transition into Bloodborne is, you know, it's hard, right? Because you lose that security. And it feels like it is forcing you to extend yourself. However, the combination of the regain system, where you get your health back by attacking after you've lost it, and the wider window on being able to get those visceral attacks in with your offhanded weapon, kind of offset. And I got acclimated to it relatively quickly on the other side of it.
See, I know. I've found the parries to be, for all intents and purposes, random. Like, I routinely hit someone during their attack animation and still get hit. Or I'll, you know, occasionally, get someone, staggered and go in for a visceral attack and or just decide not to do it.
Hmm.
So my main issue with the parry, I guess I would say my main issue with it is twofold. One, I felt that the shield system was more original, because I haven't seen other games really do that. Whereas every spectacle fighting game is basically, you know, this fighting system is, like I said, kind of a clunky version of God of War or Bayonetta or whatever. So I felt like the other was more original. I also felt like the shield system kind of traded more on like intelligence and strategy and distancing, whereas this is all twitch reflexes. And then my other thing is I just feel like it seems way too random. I generally know what I intend to do, but when I think I do it, it for some reason decides that I didn't.
Yeah.
And I guess that, to me, kind of the core, contract, quote unquote, with Dark Souls is, or with the Souls games, is we'll make a game that's very hard, but you'll never feel like you lost just because. And in this game, I routinely feel like I died just because.
Huh. Mm. So that's funny, because, you know, like, so I'll just kind of get this out of the way. Like, I can't change your opinion on it. Like, if that's been your experience with it. What I will say is that Bloodborne is, without a doubt, the hardest of these games.
Sure.
Right? Like, that first, you know, it was 12 hours before I was out of Central Yharnam. Right? And, you know, like, I didn't experience that since, you know, I spent 10 hours in the lower Undead Burg. Right? Just kind of getting up to it. Like, that was my first experience with Souls whatsoever. So this is comparable to that.
Sure.
It's asking you to, you know, to get into something else. What I will say is, you know, I kind of had pangs of a little bit of what you're saying at the beginning, but, you know, through time and kind of learning, you know, the pace of it, you know, I kind of overcame that. I can't say, you know, if that is kind of me getting good or if that is me, you know, learning the, you know, to compensate for these things that would otherwise be random or whatever. But what I will say is eventually, you know, I started doing visceral attacks like a pro and, you know, even discovering the layer beyond that. And it's a little bit, they it's weird because they stack the game with these mob encounters, you know, at the beginning, like in this Resident Evil 4 village that they start you out with, that are, you know, are not conducive to showing you an awful lot about these new systems that they bring in and about the new pace of combat and stuff. And so like once you get beyond that and it becomes a little, it starts to feel a little bit more like a Souls game, before it starts feeling not like a Souls game very much, you know, eventually you can see that kind of give and take and that, kind of very, you know, tactical awareness that it requires of you that I think that you're referring to with the shield system, except you kind of shed the need for that because the systems that they put in place are enough to kind of offset whatever security the shield would have given you.
Sure, and I think that's fair. And what I would say is, I think what it will come down to for me is the degree to which I'm able to learn the system, and kind of some of what you kind of alluded to. I feel like some of my complaint with it is, again, I feel like, you know, kind of one of the things that made the difficulty in Dark Souls tolerable is I felt like they did a very good job of designing the levels to train you and teach you, if you were paying attention, what you needed to know. Whereas I feel like they don't.
That's something kind of weird. Like, tell me this. This game is beautiful, right? Like, you're able to see a lot more detail in this just because taking advantage of the, like, this feels like the first real next generation game I've played. Right.
And sorry, I don't mean to tangent, but it's got a much better, I realize this is like the most cliche, like I'm writing a IGN review thing to say ever, but I feel like it's got a much better like sense of place.
Oh God, yeah.
In terms of like, particularly in terms of like, in some ways, you know, it brings back the Dark Souls, one, like the levels are going to twist together and have shortcuts, things that my understanding.
Spades. Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say in some ways, like at least so far, those interconnections aren't as epic and, you know, in some ways are a little bit less satisfying than Dark Souls 1. But on the other hand, I feel like the feelings of the levels in terms of like, you know, particularly like the aqueduct area of the first level is just very much like, you know, a very effective sense of like height and, you know, this, you know, just kind of this, you know, this sense of, you know, this being under the rest of the level in a way that, in a way that like the depths, I guess, theoretically were, but never really felt that way.
Yeah. What I will say, you know, just as you're talking about like what this game lacks in terms of the level design, you've only ever really been to Central Yharnam, and that's about like 1/16 of the game. So I just want to make sure that you're keeping your mind open as you look at it.
I agree. I'm overall I would say like this is a trade off, even if it's kept this way, that I think would be a reasonable trade off.
Yeah.
Is, you know, the better sense of like, of, you know, this being a complex, you know, three-dimensional area, even if that did mean that they didn't have some of the more epic, you know, vantage points and you know things like that.
So kind of getting back to my point about the game being beautiful, where that falls down and where it becomes a little bit problematic is that extra level of detail and that extra level of prettiness makes it difficult to navigate sometimes. And it makes it difficult to actually, you know, not just figure out where to go next, but to figure out what is traversable and what is, you know, kind of better. So there is a real difference between what is an aesthetically pleasing space and what is, a space that feels like it is gearing you towards, the right style of play. And so that is one of those areas where it definitely feels like it falls short of Dark Souls, because Dark Souls kind of feels like it is at the right level of fidelity to, you know, show you what's really important and more easily guide you towards kind of the intended play experience, even if it takes you a couple of times to actually see it based on the way the systems interact. Here that is there, you just have to put on a different set of eyes. And it was kind of a combination of ooh pretty and also ooh clutter.
Right. Yeah. And to be fair, I think at least some of the time I think it's supposed to be clutter. I mean, I think that's definitely a aesthetic and a theme they're kind of going for. Because this kind of is a wrecked up city.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, no.
Good.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm trying to jump in. Is it similar to Dark Souls and Demon Souls and like that your experience is only with the current life that you're on and it resets every time you die?
That's another thing I sometimes have a beef with. That is the case, although now it's possible for effectively enemies to pick up your souls, and then you get them back when you kill that enemy.
Okay.
And in my experience, most of the time, that's fine. However, in some of the enemies in the game tend to walk around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can sometimes be problematic, where your souls will not be in even remotely the same area where you died.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
It's kind of funny because it's a little bit more obviously like you're playing horse with yourself.
Sure. Yes.
You know, like you want to make sure that if you die, you always want to outdo yourself. And the thing is, those enemies, when they pick up your souls, when they pick up your blood and they get the purple eyes, however many eyes they have will turn purple, which is important later on. And also they get stronger.
Oh, do that.
Yep. At least nice. At least in terms of what I could see, like purple enemies, they act like you have more insight, which is pretty funny. And also they're a little bit more resilient than their pals, which you can see especially in that first area when you're dealing with like one dude out of a crowd who ends up being your purple-eyed nemesis.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just a little bit to kind of backpedal or whatever. I will say I think some of my frustration with this is, although overall I would kind of agree with you, I think most of their changes are understandable. I think their first area up to the first boss and their decision to not let you level up, stuff like that, in my opinion, that's not reasonable.
Yeah.
I would argue... I think in the starting area they screw up their balance of like risk first reward, stuff like that, because you know there are a lot of situations where like I lost a lot of souls because there was no way for me to spend them.
Yeah.
Or like I spent a huge amount of time fighting the first axe dude.
Yeah,
and then he dropped a upgrade item that you can't use until you've beaten the first two bosses.
Yeah,
and so like I feel like they kind of fell down in terms of considering like is the stuff we're doing just going to overtly antagonize the player as opposed to actually being challenging?
Yeah,
and the other thing is I'd say with like reading a number of reviews on it, I feel like this is kind of a Dark Souls game or a Souls game that was designed explicitly assuming you had played Souls games before.
Which is weird because it's designed that way because they're counting on you having developed habits that they can then punish you for having.
True, but like on the other hand, like I've, you know, there's actually a fairly good review that, you know, with someone saying like, I've quit Dark Souls, I've sold the game, like here's my beef with it. Mm-hmm. And it was a thing where it was like, you know, the person got to like the first boss without opening up a single shortcut.
Yeah.
And and I feel like it's a thing where like I didn't do that because I played Dark Souls and Dark Souls, you know, so I was looking for shortcuts. Mm-hmm. And then also I felt like Dark Souls made it obvious, like, we're going to walk you right past the shortcut the first time so you learn this, whereas I feel like Bloodborne doesn't do that. Does that kind of make sense?
To an extent. I don't know if I can speak to which makes the shortcuts more obvious.
Sure.
Because I feel like the shortcuts in Bloodborne kind of came back in a big bad way and reminded me of the ones in Dark Souls 1 so strongly that I kind of equate the two of them.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, like, for me, I had no problem, but looking back, at least to me, I can kind of see, you know, why that could be, why maybe it does a worse job of training a completely new player.
Yeah. And you know, that's just one of those things. This isn't a game for everybody, which feels like a little bit of a cop out, but you know, kind of speaks more to just something that I think people who are enthusiastic about the series take for granted. And you know, even, you know, Jala and Ben, you can speak to this and let me know if I'm right. An awful lot of the stuff that people kind of crow about, myself included, you know, with this series is stuff that really only feels good in hindsight. Like this was terrible to go through in the moment, or it was an ordeal or a trial, but I can look back at this and say, like, yes, that all was building up to. I'm not making the same, you know, kind of hackneyed point about like, oh man, it's difficult, but it makes you, you know, it gives you a sense of satisfaction. This is like, you know, one level of abstraction removed from that, which is just to say, like, I don't personally blame somebody for not enjoying it in the moment there, because I can totally feel the same way. And this was the, you know, the first time in, you know, 4 years that I felt this way, because, you know, by the time Dark Souls 2 came out, I was used to it. And, you know, like I kind of got there, and this changed up just enough to give me that same experience back, like to make me feel like I really didn't have my feet, you know, underneath me. And I was, you know, really resistant to it before I, you know, found my plane. Right. Because I couldn't look past the rage of like, yes, this is a very hostile decision. And the fact that, you know, even just leveling up, which feels like a really basic thing they should let you do, that is a bad decision. I agree with that, especially because they had that behind the insight, you know, mechanic, which doesn't make any sense until like way later in the game. And they could give you insight at any time, so they could move that forward, especially because they made the first area in this so hard, almost as like and that whole thing of not letting you level up until after the first boss. They did that in Demon's Souls, but they but also Demon's Souls wasn't as hard as this, I didn't feel like.
Yeah. So on the plus side, I do feel like I'm doing a lot more playing intelligently in a way I didn't in Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. In terms of like, I basically never used items for combat in Dark Souls, whereas I'm routinely using Molotovs. I'm, you know, routinely abusing / tactically using the terrain, you know, stuff like that. So I do feel like there are some positives that come from this.
Yeah.
So I did want to get your feelings on something. At what point do you think abusing the train breaks the? I mean, obviously it's my game. I can do whatever you know, that sort of thing. But you know, breaks the spirit of the game.
Can you define abusing the train?
Anything from first two werewolves, you can just walk back into the house and they can't get through the door.
Oh yeah, it is kind of like taking advantage of their leashes. Yeah,
right.
It's catch as catch can, right? Like you do whatever you do whatever the game allows you to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because I would say like the werewolf thing that seems I think fairly borderline intentional. On the other hand, you can do the exact same thing to the second boss.
Yeah.
And I'm getting close to debating doing that.
Do what you gotta, man.
Yeah.
All's fair.
So
yeah.
Sweet. What weapon did you end up focusing on?
So at the start, I picked the saw cleaver.
Okay.
Just because that seemed like the closest analog to like a short sword that I could find. The other ones felt just a little bit more specialized than I was willing to go for. The weapon that I think is the best one for the kind of build that I ran, you don't find until later. And I don't want to say how you get it because most of these are pinned bosses. And I don't want to say what the bosses are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of having a whatever. I went with the whip chain.
Yeah, that one requires you have to be able to commit to a dex build, which is not going to be able to stun as many people.
Right. So yeah, so I started with the dex focused origin and I'm kind of transitioning to strength, so I'm hoping those couple of points don't come back to haunt me.
Yeah.
I've looked at the wiki. That's, you know, I guess there's eventually a sword centric weapon that I'm kind of building towards.
Yeah. And the game is pretty kind about, you know, combining strength scaling and dex scaling. So regardless, you're going to be fine. And just like in previous games, your starting class is not Destiny.
Right. And to be fair, like just from my personality, like there is very little chance of me like new game plusing. I have no interest in PvP, so it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
So yeah, so a lot of things I like, some things I don't, but we'll see. Molotovs for everyone.
So I feel like I've dominated at least the non-player side of this discussion. Ben Jala, do you have any questions about this game for either David or myself? Just that kind of rose up.
No.
It sounds similar to Dark Souls, but even more difficult. It seems like I'm even less interested in it just because I don't like hard things.
Yeah. Understood. Similar boat, Jala?
Well, for me, I still haven't gotten back to playing Dark Souls since they opened it up after the Games for Windows Live debacle. So once I actually get back into, you know, playing anything Dark Souls related, maybe I'll have something to say. Yeah. But until then, I don't really want to poke too much at it.
Well, I'm sorry if we bored you.
Oh, no.
It's fine.
Huh. Is that all, David?
Yes, that is it.
That is everything. Cool. Well, I won't keep us here too long because most of what I played this past, you know, week and a half or so has been Bloodborne. A little bit of stuff before that. I finished up the Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton game, which is fantastic. I've talked about it enough though, and my opinion hasn't changed on it.
Satisfying conclusion though.
Yeah.
All right.
Weird as balls conclusion, but satisfying.
Yeah.
Yes.
So did you get your man?
Did I get my witch? What?
Yes.
I mean, it's more complicated than that. Let's see here. And then just like a bunch of like little stuff. Like I could talk about Pancake, but you know, that's just the new Flappy Bird. Let's see here. So I ended up getting a Wii U.
Cool.
Yeah. So I have a Wii U now and a bunch of stuff that I haven't played an awful lot of yet because of Bloodborne, like Mario Kart 8 and, you know, things like that. Super Mario 3D World, which I haven't played enough of to get an opinion. What I will say, though, is the Bayonetta game that's on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, that is pro grab, you guys.
that's the system seller.
Kinda. So I didn't expect it. Like I was like, okay, I liked what I played of Bayonetta, so I'll just order Bayonetta 2 because I know it's exclusive. Turns out Bayonetta 2 just comes with Bayonetta 1.
Oh, nice.
In its full, like, upscaled HD version. So I'm like, well, shit, I never finished Bayonetta 1, so I'm going to play that. And, man, it's a really good game, you guys, like, even still. So I haven't played it since it launched, like, back in 2010 or something like that. And, you know, I have distance from kind of the sexual stuff, and it's kind of hard for me to, like, make a statement about this as a, you know, straight white male. Like, so where do I get off making a judgment about how sensitive this is? But, like, it's really cool to watch because, like, oh, she's totally, like, powerful and in control of the situation. Like, she is never portrayed as anything but, like, competent and using that to her advantage. So, like, that thematic side of it kind of fades away and gets back into the fact that Platinum is the master of just the crazy balls to the wall, off the wall even, concept and, you know, some of the cutscenes and just dialogue is even crazier than God Hand, which I didn't think was possible, and I didn't remember it being as much so. And boy, oh boy, like, in terms of, like, this, as you said it, David, spectacle or character-based action game, this has one of the most satisfying mechanics in that, which is that that witch time thing, which I feel, you know, since I've been playing it alongside of Bloodborne and getting down to being pretty okay at pressing a button at the right frame in an animation. You know, in Bayonetta, you have to dodge at the very last moment in order to activate, like, a slow motion version of the world. So it puts everything into, like, real, real slow so you can do more damage at the time. And it leads you to watching yourself in these situations where you're being attacked by multiple enemies at once for this opportunity to dodge at the exact right time in order to clear all of them out. And that ends up being the way that you really get ahead in a lot of these encounters. And, you know, historically in the past, like, my whole thing is I'm not good at video games. Like, I'm just really bad at, like, action-based games. Watch me play any kind of first-person shooter. Watch me play anything that requires any kind of reflexes. It's not that good. That's not where my strengths lie.
But except for Rock Band.
True. But that's more of a, I feel like that's more of a musical
rhythm kind
of
and sound,
like, comprehension kind of thing. Like, rhythm is different than reflex, I feel like. Like, I wouldn't give myself credit for that, you know, aside from being a bitchin' musician, you guys. Not at all. don't worry. No. But it's just one of those things where, like, I feel, like, super good about my ability to play these games because they are difficult and I've put my mind to it to get good at them. And so that kind of gives me hope that, like, anybody, if they put their mind to it, can do these kind of things because either they're not as demanding as my stupid meat hands make them feel initially, or it's just like, oh, they're all meant to be difficult, but to make you feel like a badass when you do them. So the dopamine loop makes you work to do it.
Can I throw out a completely irrational and unfair complaint?
Sure.
The whole dodge at the last minute thing really, really bothers me because that is the exact opposite of how, like, blocking or dodging an attack works. You know, in that you know, acceleration is kind of a thing that happens, which means if you're dodging at the last minute, you're purposely dodging when the attack is moving at its fastest.
Yeah.
And a attack, you can only exert force over a very small distance. So literally, like, if someone tries to kick you, walking into the kick is a perfectly valid way to defend a kick, because the only way you can get hurt is if you get hit at the last moment. Yeah. So, sorry, that's my rant. That is obviously missing the point of fictional video games.
Right, because I was going to raise two counters to that. One, you're just doing it to look cool, right?
True. The rule of cool.
Yeah, and two, also, you're doing it, you're dodging when they're the most committed to it. So at the beginning of an attack, they're probably able to change the trajectory quicker than if, you know, at the last moment, which is probably completely nonsensical, but... You know, in a world where our minds seek to find patterns and rationale for the things we believe, that is what I've rested upon.
Well, and I feel like there is something innately wrong with applying that logic to a game where explicitly you are using witch powers to fight your foes.
Yeah.
probably logic does not necessarily apply. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really cool. I would recommend anybody who has a Wii U, like, get that, because it's a tremendous value at the very least, and they are really good games that are, you know, fun. I haven't played two, so it could just take a complete crap, but everything I've heard about it has led me to feel hopeful that it's going to continue there. And the chapters are just the right length that I feel comfortable, like, playing a chapter a night. Like, it's super digestible in a way that is pretty refreshing to me.
Cool.
So compared to, like, a God of War or Devil May Cry or a whatever the Metal Gear Solid one was, Revengeance, would kind of its you know, if you were explaining how, you know, how its gameplay was different, would it basically be the focus on, like, the last minute dodges and the, you know, that sort of precision thing? Is that kind of its gameplay convention?
Yeah, so it's a lot simpler than Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. There are a lot more systems in play. It feels like Revengeance is an extension out of that. In terms of what it is asking of you, specifically with, like, you know, having to counter attacks in the opposite direction with the right stick and stuff. Like, it feels much more demanding than this. This kind of has a, you know, it's similar to God of War in that it's combo based when you're not doing the strictly technical timing kind of stuff, frame kind of things, and it is trying to get you to get the most visual spectacle out of any kind of you know, input that you put into it, right? So it's similar to God of War in that way, although I would say that God of War is definitely far flashier than that. And you know, like, God of War, you can more get away with, like, just here's a combo that is just press triangle 7 times. Right, whereas this, you know, kind of incorporates, you know, pauses and incorporates, you know, button changes and mixes and matches, ranged and close-up combat in a way that feels really reminiscent of Devil May Cry, you know, but has larger scale encounters than Devil May Cry does. Devil May Cry kind of, like, forces you to be more aware of kind of your tactical loadout at any given time, based on kind of, like, a really tight-up view fighting a couple different foes at once. Bayonetta is more kind of, like, zoomed out, but it encourages you to kind of mix ranged and close-up attacks in a way that feels reminiscent of Devil May Cry, at least to me.
Okay, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, so hopefully that was a cogent breakdown and I didn't just spout a bunch of nonsense.
Nope, it makes sense.
I totally just make stuff up.
Yeah, well, I mean, same stuff, different week. But yeah, I like the Wii U a lot. There are some things that are a little bit goofy about it, just in terms of experience. I'm still trying to get down what is the difference between what's happening on the gamepad screen as opposed to the television screen and passing stuff back and forth. I have one major complaint. So on current-gen consoles, especially, you know, like even last-gen with the Xbox, most of the interfaces seemed geared at selling you things, right? Mm-hmm. You load up Xbox Live and you just see advertisements for Sports Dudes and, you know, television programs and games and stuff. PlayStation 4 is better about that because the thing that it shows you right at the start is what games have you played most recently. Okay, totally cool. The Wii U, it's kind of a little bit different. The main screen that you see when you turn it on is like a weird social feed of, like, what people are playing and what they're saying about it, which is fine because that's novel and it brings a little bit of the social networking element to it in a way that you wouldn't expect Nintendo to have any competency around, but, you know, it's there. The problem is, so I've got this little dock for my Wii U gamepad, and it's, you know, sitting on the coffee table, like, right next to, you know, right next to my couch, like the side table, right? And, you know, I'm walking around one day, and I see a flashing light, you know, around the home button. I'm like, huh, that's kind of weird. I wonder if there's, like a system update or something like that. So pick up the gamepad, fire it up, and open it up, and it just says, hey, Mario Party 10 is available for pre-order. Why don't you buy it? And so apparently, now I just have a light in my house that turns on whenever Nintendo wants me to buy something.
Which, but to be fair, it's Mario Pop Party apparently, it's pretty cool.
Cool. I understand that it might be kind of cool. I don't want to hear about that, by a light at my house that turns on when Nintendo wants me to buy something.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nice.
So that kind of sucks. Maybe I'm being a curmudgeon. You can
get
tell
a piece
me
of duct tape.
Ah, man, but it's like a button you have to press sometimes.
You can press duct tape.
Paint.
Ah, man, I just need to see if there's a, there's probably some kind of option I can turn on or off that will affect that. But I don't want to inadvertently turn off any kind of like actual online functionality I want to use. So,
yeah.
Oh well. Yeah, that feels like a show. Do you guys have any questions about the Wii U or the Bayonetta?
Not yet. It
feels like a show.
Yeah, it might be.
It
who knows?
Sounded like a show.
Yeah, we talked for a while. It could have just been a conversation, you guys, and that would be perfectly fine.
That was conversation number 99.
Yep, conversation 99. You guys want to button it up?
Sure.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 99. Let's see here. What can you guys do? We're on the road to 100. We're still hammering down any kind of details for how we're going to treat the centennial episode. I am still working on ways to get the old episodes back onto the feed. That is a very time-intensive process, for which I apologize if there's any confusion or inconvenience surrounding it. But otherwise, if you have any, things you want to say, it's duckfeed.tv/contact. We have that Facebook group on which we are very active, which is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And if you're going to be buying anything off of Amazon, use the link found at duckfeed.tv/tipjar. That is a huge help, doesn't cost you anything extra. And it goes towards things like I'm going to be getting new microphones for the guys and such. So,
yay!
Yeah. So that, I think, is it. Is there anything I'm missing, everybody?
Have a good week.
Well, yeah. We'll get there. We'll get there. Jala, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So for the level, I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been David Meismith at MoneySmith777 on Twitter.
Always and forever, Jala John.
I'm at Merkelizer on Twitter. David, I like how it went from 777 to 777.
Yeah.
Yes. Next week it's going to be 777.
he dodged at the last second. Yeah. And stick around to hear us talk about titles. All right, so we've got two possible choices that I wrote down, unless anybody has one that they remembered. So the first one is Whiskey Car. The second one, which might be a contender, is Tipless Daddy.
I like that.
I'm pretty fond of Tipless Daddy, you guys.
Yeah, me too.
Are there any contenders that I didn't write down in the course of the episode?
I'm just not going to say any comments on Tipless Daddy, so it's not used for incriminating material later.